It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin gardeners may be starting tomato seeds indoors about now to give seedlings a bit of a head start. We explore seed stewardship and efforts to save heirloom varieties of tomatoes. A late seed saver in Whitewater built a collection with hundreds of varieties. Call in with a question. You can share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Bevan Cohn is here, author, seed saver, and the owner of Small House Farm in Central Michigan. Bevan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, hello, Kate. Thanks for having me here today.
Yes, so you're the founder of the Michigan Seed Library. It seeks to establish community seed sharing programs. What are the benefits of sharing seeds across a community?
Oh, there are so many benefits. So we could start with, first and foremost, building that community, bringing like-minded people together to share something that they love, right? When we have a central hub, a seed library, people from all over the community can come together, not only to share their seeds, but also to learn from each other, to experience their frustrations together. Gardening can be challenging. And if you're doing that by yourself, you might want to give up. But when you have a community behind you that you can learn from, you have all of these wonderful opportunities to grow a better garden, to become a better gardener, to get better produce, all sorts of wonderful things. Plus, when we grow our own seeds in our community and save them and share them, those seeds will adapt to the area that we grow them in. So as opposed to buying new seeds that come from another place, seeds from our own communities, from our own gardens, will actually perform better and give us bigger and more delicious produce to enjoy.
Do you see these seed libraries as helping backyard gardeners or commercial farmers, or a mixture of both?
Well, a lot of the seed libraries are geared directly towards backyard home gardeners. Mm-hmm. I think they benefit from the most, but commercial gardeners certainly play a role in the seed library. A lot of the times to get a seed library started, we need to get some seeds to be able to provide for the community. And often those do come from commercial seed companies that are so generous to donate their seeds to get the program started.
What are examples of varieties that seed libraries can provide?
So many things. Imagine all of your favorite stuff, right? So we're talking about tomatoes and peppers and lettuce and greens. What I have found over the years is some of the most popular things at seed libraries actually tend to be flowers and herbs. Those are the things that folks really like to grow, especially people that have a smaller growing area, small yard, growing on a balcony, whatever it might be. Flowers and herbs are very, very popular.
I keep hearing the word library, and it just makes me wonder, could local book library systems, establish seed libraries? Is there any possibility in that?
Okay, that's the question, isn't it? So actually, most seed libraries are housed within public libraries, and a seed library functions a lot like a traditional library does. You come to the library, you check out your seeds, just like you would check out your books. You take it home, you enjoy them, you plant the seeds, you grow your garden. And then in the fall, you can save the seeds from your garden and bring them back, just like you bring your book back after you're done reading it. You can bring your seeds back to the library to restock it for your community to enjoy next spring.
How is that kind of the system for the Michigan Seed Library? How does your system work?
Each library in our system, and here in Michigan, we have, as of right now, 140 seed libraries throughout the state of Michigan. And to put that in perspective, there's maybe 600 to 700 seed libraries nationwide. We have quite a few of them here in Michigan.
Wow.
And they all operate a little bit differently depending on, their resources or the needs of their community, right? So it's real free form in a way. So we can really address the specific needs of each community. But yeah, that's about how it works. Folks can bring in their seeds and share them with the community, or they can check out seeds. And one of the things that I love about these seed library programs that are housed in public libraries is that these libraries also offer programming built around the seed library. So a lot of how-to gardening classes, how to save your seeds, how to get your seeds started in the spring, what to do with the produce. That's some of my favorite stuff, right? Once you grow all this delicious produce, some people, they need some help. What am I going to do with all this bounty? So we help them learn how to cook it, how to preserve it, all sorts of wonderful stuff.
During a recent program here, Liz from Chicago encouraged our show to have more conversations about native seeds and plant preservation. How threatened are native seeds from invasive species in the Midwest?
Well, that's a concern, most certainly. I think that native seeds are threatened by not only invasives, but they're also threatened by human expansion, we could say, right? We take over a lot of space to develop whatever, parking lots, buildings, whatever it might be. And sometimes these native plants become a victim of that expansion. So I think that any opportunity that we have to preserve those varieties, to get people growing them, it's critical that we do that. And folks can, even in their own backyard, create a small little native oasis, and they'll see just the impact that it has with the wildlife around you, the butterflies and the birds and all these wonderful things that'll move into your backyard. So it's enjoyable for the person, but it's also incredibly beneficial for nature as well.
In terms of farming, how could these practices, impact commercial agriculture to better support, seed sharing initiatives?
Well, ultimately, what we want to have happen is that these larger seed companies or agricultural organizations, we want them to focus on these local and regional seeds, right? Those are the things that we want to have them offering and growing, and maybe even have them at our grocery stores. That'd be so amazing, And I think that one of the functions of the seed library is an instigator of conversation. It gets people talking about these sorts of things and why these local varieties are important. And if we drop a pebble in a pond and it starts these ripples, hopefully we could have an impact on a larger scale throughout the agricultural systems of America.
Bevan Cohen is with us, seed saver, owner of Small House Farm in Michigan, as we learn about seed saving and heirloom seeds. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the seed-saving movement today, efforts to preserve heritage seed collections, and the legacy of this huge tomato seed collection from Whitewater. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Bevan Cohen is a seed saver in Michigan. So, Bevan, you recently inherited this seed collection, over 900 tomato varieties, from the famed Whitewater seed saver, Thane Earl. What is Earl's legacy as a seed saver?
Oh my goodness. So Thane was quite a character. And as you'll find in the seed saving world, folks that are dedicated to preserving the quantity of seeds that Thane did, they're unique individuals for sure. Thane was quite a guy. And he saved so many different seeds, not just tomatoes, lots of different beans and peppers and all sorts of wonderful stuff. But it's the tomatoes that I think really give Thane his fame, so to speak. One variety in particular that really stands out that all of your listeners are probably familiar with if they garden is the Amish paste tomato, which is a classic, right? Beautiful, big, wonderful canning tomato. We grow it here. We've grown it for years before I even understood the legacy of this tomato. Thane down there in Whitewater, he was a collector of many things. He not just seeds even. He, if you're familiar, Thane traveled the world and he loved beautiful things. And for a time, he even had his own little personal zoo of different animals that he would bring back and this sort of thing. But once he got turned on to saving his seeds, he saved so much stuff. There's actual documentation that at one point, Thane's collection included up to 1,200 varieties of tomatoes. Yeah, it's just amazing. And one of the jobs that I've been lucky enough to acquire over the years is Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company puts out a big catalog every year. It's called the Whole Seed Catalog. It's the largest catalog ever made. This one, it's over 500 pages, and it's got all the different varieties that they offer, but also these beautiful stories. And I'm lucky enough to have this opportunity to research and document the stories of these different varieties. So for the catalog that came out this year, I was assigned to find the story of the Amish paste tomato. And it was quite a wild ride to get to learn about this tomato,
You went on a journey. Yeah, what did you find out?
Well, some amazing stuff. So you first find documentation of the Amish paste tomato from Thane Earl in 1986, when he donated it to the Seed Savers Exchange, which is an organization in Decorah, Iowa. It's a nonprofit dedicated to the preservation of heirloom seeds. And they have an exchange program that members can sign up for. So folks all over the country can get into their own little catalog so they can swap seeds with each other. And Thane joined it right early in the days of the Seed Savers Exchange in 1986. And in his first listing, it included the Amish paste tomato. So that's the first place that we could find documentation of it, right? And that same year, Thane shared seeds through the program with the Landes Valley Museum in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Ah.
And the reason the museum was interested in this old Amish paste tomato came from the Amish community, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the oldest Amish communities in the United States happens to be in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, right? So he shared some of those seeds with the museum. And the museum has a program where they grow out the seeds and distribute them as a fundraiser through their community. So that's very cool. Well, then another gentleman went to the museum and found these seeds. And in 1990, he started the Heirloom Seeds Company, is what it was called. And that was the first time that the Amish paste tomato was made available commercially, widely available to folks, which quickly took over. Like I said, we grow it in our garden. Almost every gardener I know is familiar with the Amish paste tomato, thanks to the Heirloom Seed Company. But in reality, thanks to Thane Earle, right? His dedication to preserving this heritage, understanding the importance of saving these seeds.
So technically, then, how do you store and handle these heirloom seeds? I mean, this is quite a collection. How do you ensure that they are protected and that they will be able to be carried on and continued?
That's such a wonderful question. So at the Seed Savers Exchange, they preserve thousands upon thousands of different varieties, and they actually have a vault where they keep the seeds stored at very cold temperatures, right? Mm-hmm. Essentially like a very large walk-in freezer. And seeds stored in these types of environments, very, very cold, they will last for a multitude of years, right? It's long-term storage, and that's great for long-term preservation. But for us home gardeners, we don't necessarily want to put all of our seeds in the freezer. We want to continue to plant our seeds, right? Planting those seeds every year, saving the seeds from our crops, I think is the best way to do things. And in that scenario, you just want to keep your seeds in a cool, dark location, right? In a closet, in a cupboard, where you store your canned food. As long as it's cool, dark, and dry, the seeds will typically be perfectly fine to store until next year. The trick here, Kate, is understanding when to harvest the seeds.
Yes, I was about to ask you, like, when is that seed most viable? And when is the right time to collect them?
Right. So learning how to identify the maturity of the seed in each of the different species that you're going to grow in your gardens, that's the challenge for gardeners. And now it's a challenge for us because we're not familiar with it, right? Folks that haven't saved seeds. But remember, people have been saving seeds since the dawn of agriculture, right? 10,000 years people have been doing this. So it's something that all of us can do. It just takes a little bit of time out in the garden. So tomatoes, that's an easy one. When a tomato is ripe, when it changes colors from green to red, that signals its maturity. And that's when we know those seeds are ready to harvest. So a tomato at the stage that you're going to pick it anyways, those seeds in there, they're ready to be harvested, ready to be saved and shared with your friends or put away until next year.
And let's take a call now. Ted and Spooner is here. Ted, hi. You're on with Bevan Cohn.
Yeah, hello. I grew a lot of things in the garden and saved a lot of seeds. But how do you get seeds from cabbage? I'd never seen a cabbage head come out with seeds.
Oh, that's a great question. So a cabbage is a biennial plant, which means that it takes 2 years of growth before it's going to produce its seeds. So the first year, you'll have your cabbage that'll produce its head, and that's what we like to harvest and eat. But if you want to get the cabbage seeds, you got to leave that head behind. Now, in Wisconsin, where I'm at in Michigan, those cabbage heads aren't necessarily going to survive out in the garden all winter long. So we're actually going to dig those guys up. The whole thing, roots and all, you're going to dig that cabbage up, take off all the extraneous leaves, all of the outside leaves. So you just have the main head and the root. It's a long kind of taproot looking hunk of root. And you're going to want to put that away somewhere. So the easiest place to put it that I found is in a cooler, an old cooler in the garage, right? Some people will pack it with some sawdust or some sand, but I've literally just loaded a bunch of cabbages into a cooler, put a blanket over it, leave it in the garage all winter long. Next spring, as soon as the ground starts to thaw, like as soon as you can start planting your peas, get those cabbages out, dig a hole, replant them into the garden. And as it warms up, that cabbage head, it opens right up and a flower stalk will come out of the middle of it. It's the most amazing thing. You got to do it just to see this. It's incredible. Cabbage head opens up, flower stalk comes out the middle of it, beautiful yellow flowers. And then each one of those flowers will produce a little seed pod with, I mean, hundreds, perhaps thousands of seeds you can get off of just one cabbage.
Ted, thank you so much for the question and the call. Bevan, should people collect seeds from fruits or vegetables that are purchased at the grocery store?
That's a fun question. That's a question people ask a lot, you know, and people will say, oh, maybe you shouldn't save seeds from your fruits and vegetables at the grocery store because you don't know if they've been cross-pollinated. You don't know how they're being grown. You don't know if those seeds are necessarily going to come true to type. But quite often those seeds will grow and they will produce food. And if you're just growing for fun, if you just want to produce some cool peppers or tomatoes, you absolutely can do that. I have a friend at our local farmer's market. He will go to the grocery store and buy a bag of what's called lunchbox peppers. They're these little tiny sweet peppers, right? You're familiar with them?
Yes.
They're wonderful, aren't they?
Yes.
He will go to the grocery store, buy the peppers, eat the peppers, plant the seeds.
Okay.
Right out of the peppers, plant them, grow a whole bunch of these lunchbox peppers, sell them at the farmer's market, right? These peppers, a lot of these things at these grocery stores are grown on such a large scale, it's almost like a monoculture. It's just essentially that one pepper variety, as far as you can see. So the cross-pollination is actually quite limited. So you could definitely save seeds from a lot of stuff from the grocery store.
Okay, Bevan, we only have a few seconds left, but can you pick a favorite child? Is there a favorite seed in your library or something that you really love from an heirloom?
Oh my gosh, that's an almost impossible question, but I'll just say this. I've just acquired a tomato from France. It's called Bleu de Provence, and it is a little tiny pink tomato with blue blush shoulders. It is absolutely adorable, and it is so delicious, and I'm so excited to be growing it this year.
Oh, Bevan, what a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. This has been a ton of fun.
Bevan Cohn is an author, seed saver, and the owner of Small House Farm in Michigan. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.